I'm going to begin with reading you two proverbs, and then we'll talk about the principles and the meaning that goes behind them. Proverbs 15, verse 23. A person has joy in giving an appropriate answer. I'm reading this from the New English Translation. A person has joy in giving an appropriate answer, and a word at the right time, how good it is. A word at the right time. Proverbs 25, verse 11. This is from the God's Word to the Nations translation, and it goes like this. Like golden apples in silver settings, so is the word spoken at the right time. The right time is definitely an important factor in the life and success, whether it's business, whether it's marriage, whether it's retirement, whether it's relationships, whether it's all kinds of decisions, the right time. And we might call that timing. Now, timing is the brainchild, said one person, the brainchild about any task or any event in life. You literally cannot accomplish anything in life without the right timing. Think about that. The right timing. You want to buy a house now? Is this the right time? In some cases, you know, you can postpone it too long sometimes, but the right timing is very important. And the word spoken at the right time. Now think about that. A word spoken at the wrong time. The wrong word. The wrong. You say it at the wrong time. It doesn't mean anything when you say a bad word. You're giving somebody a rebuke, but you give it to them at the wrong time. I know husbands who've corrected their wives in front of other people. I know people who've corrected their children in front of us. It's not the right time. It's not the right time to embarrass them in front of everybody else. You take them aside. You don't rebuke an employee while they're on the job in front of other people. You know, Joe, you didn't do that right. You know, you've just been slacking, and you tell it right in front of other people. That's not good. And especially if you do it to Joe, who's maybe a supervisor or supposed to be a lead man, and you do it right in front of other people, or you rebuke your child right in front of other people. It's just not smart. It's the wrong timing gets the wrong results. So what do we mean by the timing? This phrase, it's called timing is everything. The phrase timing is everything means that the timing at which something happens or is done can greatly affect its outcome or success. For example, if you make a job offer to someone at the wrong time, they may not be able to take it. Even if they would have accepted it under different circumstances. Or you propose. Now, let's say you meet someone of the opposite sex and you're interested in pursuing a relationship, and you say things at the wrong time. You push it way ahead of where it's supposed to be, and that person just kind of backs away or thinks, what are you saying, you know? I've known guys who've gone, you know, well, marry me. Well, marry, we haven't even talked about marriage. What is going on here? So they may not be able to take it or even, accept the proposal, and in different circumstances, maybe under different circumstances. The phrase also implies that if something happens at the right time, it can greatly increase its chances of success. So timing your behavior and your words. You heard when in the announcement portion, Sandra said that her father said, you'll never make it. After she brings home good grades and compliments from her teachers in school, in college, her father said, you'll never make it. Yeah. So it's very timing is absolutely correct. And these proverbs say it, that like golden apples in silver setting, so a word spoken at the right time. It's a beautiful thing if you say it at the right time. If you say it meaningfully in the right, you know, not in just the right words, but the right timing. Now, in the book of Ecclesiastes, in chapter 3, there are 28 statements. And they are done in 14 antitheses, 14 things that are the opposite. And we'll give you an example right here. Here it is. By the way, who appoints these times? You'll see 28 statements about times. We know who appoints the times. Psalm 31, verse 15 says, "My times are in your hand. Deliver me from the hand of my enemies and persecutors." Now, my times, my things that happen to me are in your hands. And so in Proverbs, in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we see the various different statements. The first one is this: there is a time to be born. Well, that's right. Now, the word time often means an occurrence. There's a situation, it happens. It's a time. It happens here. The time to be born. And the book of Genesis talks about that. And there's a time to be born, you remember? Then you see it in Genesis chapter 17, verse 17. "Then Abraham went down on his face and laughing." Now, God is telling him, you're going to have a child, and your seed will be, you know, greater than, you know, this and so on. And Abraham went down on his face laughing, and in his heart, he said, in his head, in the heart means he's thinking this, "May a man 100 years old have a child?" As he's saying, "And I'm going to visit you at this time. Will Sarah at 90 years old give birth?" I mean, it's hilarious almost, because no one ever heard of this. In Genesis 17, verse 21, I'm going to read this from the New English Translation. But I will establish my covenant. Okay, this is Genesis 17. I wrote verse 17. I read verse 17. Now I want to read verse 21. Genesis 17, verse, "But I will establish my covenant with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you at this set time next year." Now, God has set the time. It will happen next year. There's a time to be born, and Isaac had his time set. Okay? Now, a lot of these times are out of our control. Do you have any control when you were going to be born? No, you have no control. You have no control, no say-so. Nobody asked you when you wanted to be born. Nobody asked if I wanted to be born in this century or the last century or in whatever month. I was never asked. There was no choice. They don't say, "When would you like to be born?" You choose here on the calendar the day, the month, the year. We have no control. Not only do we not have control regarding the time, we don't have no control regarding who, where, who are our parents. I had no control. Where was I going to be born? Happened to be in Pennsylvania. A lot of people. You know, but where? I didn't have any control. I was just where I was born. And the way you are, you had no control. You had no control over who your parents are. So if you had good parents, you lucked out. You got a good thing and they were taking and care of you. You had a loving mother, a loving father. But sometimes we don't get always a loving father. Although some fathers are much more loving, but they just don't know how to express it. You know, there used to be in one of the comedy shows, he said, "Dad, why don't you ever say, why don't we ever say I love you?" And he said, "I love you? What are you talking about? Are you in a fantasy world here? You know, people don't go around." He said, "Well, didn't your parents say they loved you?" He said, "No." He said, "Why?" "They didn't want to spoil us." You know, a lot of people think if you tell kids you love them, it'll go to their head. They'll be a big shot. And we have to keep them humble. We have to keep them so. And the worst thing, we didn't want anybody having any pride. You know, you got to keep them down. That's the, and a lot of churches feel that way. You're nothing but a worm. You're nothing but a lowly. You're just cattle, sheep, and donkeys. And, you know, you're just sheep. You're dumb. You're a lot dumb like a sheep. You know, now the word dumb in a sheep doesn't mean stupid. It means it doesn't open its mouth. It can't say anything. Doesn't mean dumb in the way that we think of it. So we have no choice. Time to be born. There's a time for you. You have a birthday. There was a time. That was it. And you had no choice. And you have no choice where, how, your genealogy, your race, your nationality, your gender, you were born whether what your gender was. Little girl, little boy, you have no choice. That's just the way it was. So you have a time to be born. And then the next part of the Ecclesiastes is a time to die. There is a time to die. All of us will have a time. Well, I don't know when it is. I don't know where my time is. I don't know what your time is. But there will be a time that we all know when we die. Okay? And we have no choice in that. The Bible says, the day of one's death, and this is, I'm reading from Ecclesiastes chapter 3. In verse 2, a time to give birth and a time to die, or a time to be born and a time to die. So some people give birth. There's a time you'll give birth. And, you know, a lot of women who are expecting, when is it going to come? When is it going to come? And that's one old country doctor said, the apple will drop from the tree when it's ripe, when it's ready to drop from the tree. All right, a time to die. Yes, Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27. And inasmuch as it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes the judgment. It's appointed to us to die. In the day of your death, the Bible says you have no control. No man has power. You have no power on the day of your death. That's it. You lose it. Your energies are gone. You have no life. You have no vitality in your body, in your life, and you just, that's it. It takes you. In Job chapter 14, verse 5, he says, "Since his days are determined," I'm reading this from the New American Standard Version, "since his days are determined, the number of his months is with you, and his limits you have set so that he cannot pass." Let me read it in the New English Translation. "Since man's days are determined, the number of his months is under your control, you have set his limit, and he cannot pass it." Now, there's a limit. We all have a limit. Now, maybe your limit, a lot of people, I believe, in our world and with the standard American diet and all that, I think they don't ever make their limit. They're not anywhere near their limit. But because of the kind of bad food, the kind of chemicals we get in our food, the pesticides, the herbicides, the other stuff, and people are not careful and they eat too much sugar and all this stuff. I think a lot of people die before their limit. Okay. And I want to read that again. This is a time to die. Job chapter 14, verse 5 in the New English Translation. "Since man's days are determined, the number of his months is under your control. You have set his limit, and he cannot pass it." So at a certain point, everybody runs down. Now, what they've found, if you're If you lead a pretty good, healthy life, the average person who leads a good, healthy life, their demise does not linger years and years and years of having a disease. They usually living healthy, 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 healthy. They hit a situation and they go down within a few months. Within a few months, they don't linger and suffer long. Their time has come up, it's gone down, and that's it. And that's the way I think is a good way to live and to die. So here it is, a time to be born and a time to die. A time to give birth, and we have no control. We have no control over the day we're going to die, the day of one's death. I don't know. Do you know how you're going to die? You don't know unless you commit suicide. You could probably do that, but that would not be a smart answer, okay? That's not a good thing. All right. The next verse, at that same, in verse 2, a time to plant. A time to plant. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. A time to plant. And this is really applied to kingdoms, governments, nations, as well as, you know, you could say it's a time to plant. It certainly is a time to plant. I want to tell you something. If you're back in the Northeast, my dad always had to wait. Sometimes he'd try to get a jump on it and plant his tomato plants before Memorial Day, May 31st, or May 30th, whatever. And he'd wait till after Memorial Day to plant his tomatoes for the most part. Every now and then he'd buy a few tomatoes and see if he could get a jump on Memorial Day if it would stay. But every now and then you got to freeze. You wouldn't want to plant all your tomato plants that you bought before Memorial Day, because it's likely that you're going to get another freeze and they'll die. So that's what happens. So there's timing. There's timing to plant. But when this word plant, it's used about planting kingdoms. Okay. Psalm 44, verse 2. You, by your power, defeated nations and settled our fathers on their land. You crushed the people living there and enabled our ancestors to occupy it. That's from the New English translation of Psalm 44, verse 2. Now, here's the New American Standard translation of Psalm 80, verse 8. You removed the vine from Egypt. That is, Israel was his vine. You drove out the nations and planted it. Now, today there's a lot of talk and the sympathy to people. Well, here's the argument. The Palestinians argue it was our land. The Jews came in, England and the United Nations decided to put Israel in that land, and we lost our land. We had that land for hundreds of years, and now all of a sudden we don't have that land anymore, and they're in it. Now, that is true. They had a land for a while, but Israel had that land before that. And then there were other people that had the land before Israel got there. And then he's telling you, when Israel came out of Egypt, there were already people in that land. Now, you can boo-hoo. We can all boo-hoo that, oh, they moved it. Well, what about the American Indian, what we call the Native Americans? They were here on this land for hundreds and maybe thousands of years, roaming, having their buffalo and eating the buffalo and eating crops and, you know, living off the land. They moved from here to there and blamed the different tribes of the Native Americans. What happened when the white man came? Well, we drove them out. Every people, nearly every people have lost lands, lost their place, driven out. A different nation took it over. And one nation conquers another. And you know what happened to Israel. The northern tribes went into captivity. And what did the king of Assyria do? He brought in another kind of people and put them in their land and planted them there. And took them, the tribes of the northern tribes went scattered throughout the other places in the world. And then the southern kingdom, they took those out. All the Jews of the South Kingdom, you know, the Kingdom of Judah, were taken out. Yeah. People have lost lands all over the place. This is not anything new. Nothing new. These people lost this land in Europe. One group took over this place. They made these people captive. These people got captive, and we took here. Look at the African Americans. They were taken from, a lot of them taken from the land of Africa and brought over here. And they were displaced, and they were brought here. And other people, look at the Mexicans. Where I'm living in Southern California was probably owned by Mexico at one time, but you know, the United States drove them down, and in some cases picked a war. I was not very honest, not very nice, but they picked a war and took land from them. And what are we going to do? Give it back? Is everybody going to go back to what it once had? The whole world would be in upheaval. It's just the way life is. It's not healthy. It's not good necessarily. But people have lost lands, and the Palestinians lost theirs. Okay? They want part of it back. They want it all back. That word river to the sea means I want all of that back, and they can't have it back. Are we going to give Los Angeles back to this country of Mexico? No. You can't have it. It's ours now. And things have, we bought the Louisiana Purchase from France. They would like to have that. We bought Alaska from, I guess, Russia, and paid them for it. And we, you know, it was called Seward's Ice Box up there. One of the Secretaries of State, we went ahead and purchased that land. And now it's ours. We're going to give it back? No. And it's just the way it is. Life is that way. A time to plant. Listen to Psalm 80 in verse 15. Even the shoot which you right hand has planted, and on the son whom you have strengthened for yourself. Okay, you've planted this shoot in these lands, and Israel grew. Israel grew. Now, in Isaiah, Israel is compared to a vine that God plants, and he plants it, but because it didn't obey him, what did he do? He rooted it up. Look at Jeremiah chapter 18, verse 9. He's talking about what at one time, if a nation does right, you know, he will let it be prospered. Or in Jeremiah 18, verse 9 now, or at another moment, I might speak concerning a nation or concerning. That's absolutely right. In another moment, if they don't obey, he will speak about rooting it up, taking it out. So here you have in verse 2, a time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted in verse 3, in verse 2, the last part. So time to plant and a time to pluck up. King James, I think, says pluck up. Uproot. So you have Jeremiah 18 and verse 7, at one kingdom to uproot and pull it down. Absolutely. God can uproot nations and tear them down and move peoples and, you know, you scatter them. I mean, Arabic peoples all over the place have been uprooted and changed and moved here, and you know, the Babylonians, where did they go? Where did the Persians go? They went here. Some of them went this way, that way. A lot of people were taken captive. That's why you have a lot of mixture in the Middle East and people mingling peoples together often. So now we have in verse 3 of Ecclesiastes, a time to kill. A time to kill. Okay, and then the time to kill, Psalm 78, verses 30 and 32. Before they had satisfied their desire. He's talking about in the wilderness, you know, how the people complain, I want this, I want meat. They, you know, just griping about it. And they just complained about everything. Before they had satisfied their desire, while their food was in their mouths, the anger of God rose against them and killed some of their stoutest ones and subdued the choice men of Israel. Wow, I didn't know that it was the best ones. And some, In spite of all this, they still sinned and did not believe in his wonderful works. That's Psalm 78, verses 30 through 32 in the New American Standard Version. Now I want to read verse 34. When he killed them, then they sought him and returned and searched diligently for God. A time to kill. Now, God does not murder. There's no time for murder, brethren. There's no time. Murder is absolutely outside of this realm. But God has the power to. He has the power to kill. He has the power to heal. So the next opposite here, you have a time to kill and a time to heal. Heal. It's a time to heal. Now, this is one of the most famous things of the time to heal. Look at this. Isaiah chapter 38. Hezekiah got struck with a debilitating, mortal disease. Isaiah 38 verses 4 through 7 says, then the word of the Eternal came to Isaiah saying, go and say to Hezekiah, thus says the Eternal, the YHWH, the God of your father David, I have heard your prayer. I have seen your tears. Behold, I will add 15 years to your life. Now, when Hezekiah got this word, now the first thing is that the prophet went to Hezekiah, and he was told by God, go to Hezekiah, tell him, get your house in order. You're not going to come off your sick bed. You're going to die. That's it. And Hezekiah turned and wept. He said, I've tried to do everything I could. I've tried to be a good king. I've done this for you and I. And he cried and cried. And it said, how the Bible uses the word in the King James Version, wept sore. He wept sore. And so I will deliver you from this city. And then he goes, I will deliver you from this city and the king of Assyria. I will add 15 years and I will defend this city. Dropping down to verse 21, now Isaiah had said, let them take a cake of figs and apply it to the boil that he, Hezekiah, may recover. Now, he had said, that's the past tense, he had said this before he was healed and applied. So many times here you see the use of natural elements, natural substances. What do people do? You don't have health insurance. You didn't have all these pharmacies and in the time past. And one of the things we have discovered from China and from Russia, who were much poorer, in those early days, and their people did not have pharmacies and drug companies and also pharmacies to get drugs. Many of them had to use herbs and things in the soil and things that they put from Mexico. A lot of people used lemons and lemon juice. They would put on sores and stuff like that on their face. They would heat it up and put the lemon juice and deal with sores. And they'd rub oils and other creams and stuff that they got in a natural way. You'll see every kind of people, Chinese herbs, you'll see people who do acupuncture and so on. They have a whole bunch of access to different herbs. So Isaiah said, he had said to them, take some figs. Figs have such a power of drawing stuff out of a boil. Now, today, I think we have a salve that will draw stuff out of a boil as well. You don't have to use good figs that are probably expensive nowadays and good to eat. But at that time, use a cake of figs and apply it to the boil that hay, meaning Hezekiah, may recover. In Psalm 147, verse 2, the Lord, the Eternal, builds up Jerusalem. He gathers the outcasts of Israel. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. He counts the number of the stars and he gives names to all of them. This is, again, the psalm in poetic language to extreme exaggeration of all that God can do. It's declaring God's power and God's omniscience and God's omnipotence. He builds up Jerusalem. He brings the outcasts. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. Yeah, you can attribute all the healing of the brokenhearted to God, God's mercies and God's kindness. Look at Psalm 107. Again, poetic language, but listen, verse 17. Fools, 107, Psalm 107 from the New American Standard Version, of fools because, beginning in verse 17 now, fools because of their rebellious way and because of their iniquities were afflicted. Fools get afflicted. Now, you know, I had a series on child rearing called The Father of a Fool, because the proverb says a father of a fool has no joy. No, your son is just doing crazy stuff, stupid stuff, get in trouble. You have no joy. But by the way, the fool has no joy either. Look, fools, because of their rebellious way and because of their iniquities, were afflicted. Their soul abhorred all kinds of food, and they drew near to the gates of death. That is, their whole digestive system was breaking down. And when your digestive system breaks down, you don't like food. You have no appetite. You don't have any feeling for food. A good appetite is a sign of good health. And they were near to the gates of death. Then they cried out to the Eternal, to the YHWH, in their trouble. He saved them out of their distresses. He sent his word and he healed them and delivered them from their destructions. They recognize how stupid they've been, how foolish they've been, how crazy they've been, and how their life was just waning down to nothing. And then they cried to God. They cried to the Eternal. He sent his word and healed them and delivered them from their destructions. Let them give thanks to the Eternal, to the YHWH, for his loving kindness, means his covenant kindness, and for his wonders. His wonders, those wonderful works, I think King James said, to the sons of men, to humans, to us, sons of men, meaning men and women, sons of men and women, what he does for them. And God has, there's a time to heal. And in many of you, you may have something, you may have, be fighting cancer, heart disease, Parkinson's. There may be a time for you. I don't know what God has in store for you, but God can do it. There's no doubt about that. You have to believe that God can do it. Then it says in the last part, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down. That's the New American Standard Version translation. Last part of verse 3, a time to tear down. Jeremiah chapter 39, verses 1 and 2. You know, there's a time to tear down. Sometimes you just have to tear down. It's not working. It's not good. I know some people who've had an extra room they put on their house and it leaked, and then they got the rain came in, and for some reason that extra room had water going down the walls. It turned into mildew and all kinds of fungus, and it was not healthy. And they've spent time and time money on it, and it just doesn't seem to work. They're going to have something. They've decided to tear that room out, tear it down. Sometimes there's a time to tear down. So this Jeremiah 39, verses 1. Now when Jeremiah was captured in the ninth year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the 10th month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his armies came to Jerusalem and laid siege. In the 11th year of Zedekiah, listen to the timing here. in the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the fourth month, in the ninth day of the month. And if you had a watch, you'd probably say it was, 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. In the ninth day of the month, the city wall was breached. Here came the Babylonians. The king of Babylon and all his armies came to Jerusalem and breached the city wall and tore it down and came in. Now you see Jeremiah chapter 39, verses 6 through 8. Then the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes at Riblah. The king of Babylon also slew all the nobles of Judah. Then he blinded Zedekiah's eyes and bound him in fetters of bronze to bring there all the people. Moving out. Where do you think Daniel and his friends went? They were in Jerusalem, and they went back to Babylon. Their names were changed. They got the education in the Babylonian culture and so on. They knew that, but he never gave up his belief in the YHWH, the God of Israel. He never gave that up. Not Daniel. But they were taken out. The Chaldeans also burned with fire the king's palace and the houses of the people. That is all the ruling people. And they broke down the walls of Jerusalem. Broke them down. Tear down. That's word tear down is tear the country down. And why? Because they disobeyed. Why do the prophets think bad things happen to Israel? Always because they broke God's laws. They didn't follow God's covenant. They just went off and worshiped other gods, the worst thing they could do. In Malachi chapter 1, verses 4 and 5, we read this. Though Edom says, we have been beaten down, but we will return and build up the ruins, though they say this, thus says the Eternal of Hosts, they may build, but I will tear down. When God finishes with a nation, he's done with it. That nation may build, but God will tear it down. And men will call them the wicked territory and the people toward whom the Eternal is indignant forever. Your eyes will see this, and you will say, the Eternal be magnified beyond the border. It's magnified beyond the border of Israel. Because he's going to do it. The country of Edom is going to try to build up after they hurt Israel, and God's going to tear it down. So there's a time to tear down. You see that here. And a time to build up. This is also in that same verse 3. Okay? Time to tear down, time to build up. In Nehemiah, you see the time to build up. Then I said to them, Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17 through 20. Then I said to them, you see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach. If you don't have a border, if you don't have something that's your wall, if you don't have something, we're a reproach. If you just, down anybody can walk in, anybody can help themselves. And, my mic is not muted now. Dave, I'm going to start.
You're time you're to build up. Now, Dave.
In Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17 through 20, I'm going to read that passage. Then I said to them, you see the bad situation we're in, that Jerusalem is desolate. Now, you know that the king of Persia allowed them to go back to the land. I'm going to let you go back and build this up. After they had conquered Babylon, they were allowed to go back. And then I said to them, you see the bad situation that we're in. The Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned with fire. Come, let's build the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach. Well, you have a city that has no wall. It's a reproach. It's like, oh, you've been conquered. I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. Now the king told them, go, you want to worship, go back to your place. Then they said, let us arise and build. So they put their hands to the good work. When Sanballat and the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite the official and Gershem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, what is this thing you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king? Well, they thought they escaped from Persia. No. So I answered them and said to them, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we his servants will arise and build, but you have no portion or right or memorial in Jerusalem. Get out of Jerusalem. Now in Psalm 102 and verse 13, you will arise and have compassion on Zion, for it is a time to be gracious to her, for the appointed time has come. You know, God can cause people to go into captivity, but there's a time. There's a time to come and build it back up. Look what happened to Germany, just for instance. And Germany had been a major Christian country years ago. They were very instrumental in the Protestant Reformation and getting away from the one church strangling everybody into their doctrines. It was Martin Luther who started this thing and said, no, I'm going to read here. I'm going to read more scriptures than you all. I'm going to read Paul's writings. And he saw it. And he said, no, all these indulgences and buying offices and making people pay whether people were in purgatory, that's not Bible. So Germany really had a lot of Christian background for it. And we bombed Germany. We bombed Germany while people were studying, and it came out as the Kittel's Theological Dictionary. Kittel was the original editor, and it finished nine volumes. Nine, I have them on my shelf behind me. Nine big volumes with every major Greek word of the New Testament. Kittel's Theological Dictionary of the New Testament. That's what it's called. And every major Greek word, every major Greek word. Now, you have to know a little bit of Greek because a lot of stuff is in Greek. You'll see it there. You'll be able to see the words and the wording. But then it's been translated into English, but you'll see some words are still in the Greek, and you'll see it that way. And every major Greek word has been studied from ancient times, way back in the ancient Greece, modern Greece, more in the Middle Ages, more in the church things, what Paul wrote, how they were in the Gospels and so on. Every major Greek word, thick volumes. I mean, their volume is like this, okay? And there are nine of them, every major. Now, they don't have small Greek words like and the and this and that, but every major Greek word. It's an incredible thing. Well, what did Germany do after we bombed and bombed and bombed it? Bombed churches and so on. There was one church left, and it stayed. But they came in, and we, the United States of America, helped them with the Marshall Plan, and they rebuilt it. Today, Germany is a big modern nation, you know? I don't know necessarily they're going always the right direction, but they've got tremendous things happening, and they're considered one of our allies. We built up Japan. We helped Japan get rebuilt, and these people worked, and they built their nation again. So there's a time to build up. And Psalm 102, verse 13, you will arise and have compassion on Zion, for it is time to be gracious. You see it here? For it is, surely your servants find pleasure in her stones and feel pity for her dust. For the nations will fear the name of the Eternal, and all kings of the earth your glory. For the YHWH, that's the Eternal, has built up Zion, and he has appeared in his glory. It's to God's glory when we build up. For he has regarded the prayer of the destitute and has not despised their prayer. This will be written for the generations to come, that a people yet to be created may praise the Eternal. There's a time then to build up. There's a time for to be born. There are times, and timing in life is very important in your life. What you do with your time, how you do your business, how you do your personal investments, how you do what you buy. Is it a time to buy a car now? I don't know. You have to get a good wisdom. Part of what we call wisdom and part of what we call luck is really timing. You did it at the right time. You buy this here and the prices go up. Some of you bought houses many years ago. I'm going to get into a house and buy it. You did. And the prices have gone up. And you've done better with your houses and some of the things that you've done. Some of you started a business and it just happened to be going. It was the right kind of business, the right time. And you started a family. Many of you started a family at the right time. Many of you entered a marriage at the right time for the right reasons. And, you know, timing is everything. Timing is everything. And there's a time, and we'll talk about it next time, time to weep. There is. We're going to talk about this because we have to find some balance in all of this. And timing really is everything. And we want to do things, if we possibly can, in God's time, with God's love, with God's approval. Join us in 2 weeks when I finish this, and join us next week when Robert Bates talks about are there brighter days ahead for believers. And now we're going to close with prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for your mercies and your love and your kindness to your people. We know many things are out of our control. We have to make the best of the things that happen, where we're born, to whom we're born, the parents we had, the race, gender, nationality, language that we're born into. Wherever we are born into a certain culture. We have no choice but that. But we thank you that we do have choices how we live our lives. We have choices about what we will believe about ourselves. We have choices about how we will behave in this world. We have choices to accept your law and live by it and your morals and live a life that is worth living and that praises you and praises Jesus Christ and when we call ourselves Christians. We have choices in all those. We have to beg you for your choice for healing when the healing is beyond our power. We have to ask you, Father, for your mercies and whether you give them and how you give them and your timing. We have to ask all these things because we are in many ways helpless and we just don't know. We come to the end of our rope and we have to turn to you. We ask your blessing on your people, wherever they are, however they are, and we ask that you will just encourage them and strengthen them and accept their worship. As we worship you today, our Father who art in heaven, your name is glorified and holy, and we do it through the name of our Lord, our Savior, Jesus the Christ. Amen.